Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
To another episode of the World's Team on Blocking the Boys Network in partnership with SB Nation. I am Meg Murray and I am joined by Paul Stewart. Hey, Paul, how's it going?
Pretty good. I'm pretty excited. It's almost football for today against the Commanders and I'm pretty happy. Yeah.
Yeah, they did you a solid and decided to do a noon kickoff over in the States. So that's a pretty good game for you.
Very, very happy. For the first time so far this season, I can actually watch football at a respectable time here in the UK. So here in the UK, it's going to be a 6 p.m. kickoff, which is obviously 12 p.m. midday central time. So, but yeah, I'm happy. All the people in Europe are happy because it'll be like 8 p.m. their time. But yeah, I'm pretty happy.
Tuesday morning viewing the other day.
Yeah, I was pretty much dead to the world on Tuesday. I'll be perfectly honest with you. I was literally like Night of the Living Dead, going to work and stuff like that. So, yeah, that was not fun. Kept falling asleep most throughout the whole day.
Was it worth it?
Oh yes, absolutely. Like anything for a Cowboys victory is always worth it.
There you go. All right, well, we're looking for one of those this week. So let's just kind of look at how that landscape looks going into tomorrow. We have, notably, I would say, I think the most notable thing is that we're getting Michael Gallup back at wide receiver.
Yep. So I believe, I just had their injury report right there. There we go. Yeah, so he had full practice all week. On Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. His game status has still not been determined yet, but it is very likely he will feature in this game.
I think this is a really good game for him to come back. Especially like it's an opponent we know. And also just the fact that their defense isn't scare us as much as others, and we're able to bring him in on a snap count that like could, you know, potentially get him back in the groove as we go into like facing the Rams and the Eagles upcoming.
I think we were kind of mentioning this before we started recording. It's like we need to have our expectations with Gallup. Like, we don't want to kind of like throw him into the wheels and make him play the whole game type of thing, but I think he will kind of contribute like greatly. Like, he'll definitely give Cooper Rush more options going into this game and give Kellen more and more flexibility what to do with the offense. So in a way I'm excited, but I just don't think we just need to expect too much from Gallup in this game.
Yeah, definitely. I think you mentioned like 20 to 25 snaps would be like kind of where you'd have him at.
Yeah, like and the same kind of goes for offensive lineman Jason Peters. Same for him, because obviously last week Jason Peters made his debut and pretty much immediately made an instant impact, making a beautiful inside block, opening the gap between him and Tyra Smith for Tony Pollard. It was Ezekiel Elliott, I believe it was. I can't remember. It was one of the running backs. It was one of the run plays anyway, but it was an instant impact, and Jason Peters looked really, really comfortable in the pass protection and stuff like that as well. And yeah, it was quite good, but I think we're expecting to see more reps for Mr. Peters coming into this game as the season progresses. And
yeah, I think Gallup. this is a good ramp up game for Peters. And then, yeah, just getting Gallup back in the groove. I feel like this is the perfect one for him.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that'll be good.
Yep, definitely.
Yep. And then, so, I mean, of note, we're looking at Jaren Kearse was limited. DeMarcus Lawrence was limited. Connor McGovern was limited. And then obviously Dak Prescott did not practice and Dalton Schultz was limited. I'm looking at likely, you think D-Law will start this game?
Yeah, like you mentioned he was limited. So he was limited on Wednesday and Thursday, but he did have a full practice on Friday there. So I think one of the, I can't remember who tweeted it out, but basically one of the reports says he's like, he is kind of struggling with his foot a little bit, but and he did participate in full practice, but they are expecting him to be ready to go regardless. Like he's ready to go against Washington. And
other than that, I think we'll probably see Kearse will be out, McGovern will be out, and Schultz will be out. And obviously,
So Kearse, McGovern, and Schultz are definitely questionable. But I just like especially what's been going on in throughout the NFL, I think it's probably better safe and sorry not to feature those players because obviously, not to kind of bring other teams into the discussion, but the whole Tua concussions scenario with thing, I think it's just been terrible how that's been handled, but. For likes of our players, I think it's just better being safe and sorry and just make sure they're fully recovered.
No, I definitely agree. I mean, the Tua thing, I think, reaches every team in a way, just the way that was handled and, you know.
Yeah, he should never, like me as a fan, just seeing that, like he should never have been on that field. And
no.
And he picked up a nasty concussion in that game
on Sunday, and then
then he was playing Thursday night, and it was just horrible to watch. So and especially when it comes to the NFL, we're always trying to improve player safety and try and improve the longevity of these players' careers and after football as well. And that is not doing anyone any favors. So for likes of doesn't matter if it's concussion or a broken hand and stuff. So say, for example, when it comes to Dak Prescott, as long as Cooper Rush is doing his job, keep him in. By all means. I don't want Dak to come back anytime sooner than what he... until he's fully ready, until the hand's properly healed up. If you bring him in too soon, it might actually make it even worse. So I'm definitely full on about player safety. End of...
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I mean, that's a good point, though, is that that's why it's so great that Cooper Rush is doing a great job at being the backup quarterback, and that's what you want because you don't want to have to rush someone back and, like, force an injury again. And that's the thing. And Dez Bryant made a good point about this, and he was like, he had a comment from somebody that said, well, you always wanted to play like when you were injured and stuff too. And he was like, of course I did. Like, obviously all the players are going to want to play, but like, that's where you kind of have to step in and tell them, I'm sorry, no, you can't. And he's like, I would have listened to some of that advice back when I was playing.
Yeah, absolutely. Like any player if you're a starter or a backup, no matter what, you have that player mentality. You want to go in and ball out regardless. And Dez is a really good example of that. Like, if he was struggling with any type of lingering injury, he would still want to be on that field because he still feels and have that confidence to think he can still do his job, and rightly so. But end of the day, it's down to the medical staff to oversee if they don't feel he's up to that, like, if there's any risk factors to make things worse, don't make them play. It's as simple as that. And unfortunately for like some Miami, they did not do their job in regards to that.
Yeah. And that's one of those things when you're looking at teams like, you know, the Commanders, you obviously, we kind of talked about this earlier. Carson Wentz was sacked 9 times last week versus the Eagles.
9 times by the defense in front of the Eagles. So so that makes the Eagles now the third. They're now ranked number 3 in terms of sack count. The Cowboys are now are top number 1 with 13. And the Buffalo Bills are no, sorry.
Cowboys
are first. I think the Eagles are second. Then it's Buffalo in terms of sack numbers. Yeah, that's
NFC
what it is.
East. Look at us. Who would have thought?
Not me. Yep.
But yeah, so I mean, going into this week, you know, being sacked 9 times by the Eagles, and you're coming to, you know, down to Texas, and you're going to be against the number one in sacks, the Dallas Cowboys. I hope Carson Wentz will be okay because
that
defense is coming right at him. That's
absolutely
for sure.
And just to kind of just to push the narrative here is like the Cowboys have an opportunity to actually be the number one pass rush defense if depending on the performance they do against the Commanders, because in terms of pass rush grading, the Buffalo Bills are right number one right now. Then it's the Cowboys, then it's the Eagles. So it's a wee topsy-turvy of those top three teams there in terms of the pass rush, not in sack numbers. So, but hopefully, how we saw DeMarcus Lawrence play against the Giants, and hopefully Micah Parsons will be fully recovered after obviously had that cold against the Giants. He'll be back up to full 100% fitness in terms of, like, there's nothing kind of making him feel lethargic or anything like that. So he'll be all good to go. And he'll be, and plus this will be Micah Parsons' first ever game against Carson Wentz, because obviously last season Wentz was with the Indianapolis Colts and we did not play them last year at all. So this is going to be a brand new experience for Carson Wentz meeting Micah Parsons for the first time.
Yeah, I'm sorry for this man is all I have to say about that.
Pray for Wentz. Not really, but you know what I mean?
I mean, we don't want him to get injured, but yeah. I would like to see him meet the turf a couple times. I won't lie.
Yeah. there is a great photograph of him, like him getting sacked by during the Eagles game, and he just looks so bemused. It just like, really, I'm getting sacked again. Like that was like the actual expression on his face. He just looks so not want to be there.
Do we think that Dorrance Armstrong can recreate the photo of Randy Gregory and Taylor Heinicke with Carson Wentz this year?
Oh, that's a good show, actually.
I need him to get his smirk on when he gets him down on the ground.
I think it might be more D'Lo. I may actually do that, to be fair.
I can see him taking that spot. We need another meme in this in the Cowboys Nation.
Yeah, so. We do.
But back to Carson Wentz. I mean, we haven't seen him in a hot minute, but you know, he is one of those quarterbacks, much like Jones, that's able to, you know, make a run for it. And we did have a little bit of an issue stopping him from doing that last week. Not that it really, you know, made too much of a difference. But how do you see that? Like, do you feel like the defense has that kind of in the back of their heads going into this week after, you know, having an issue with Jones last week?
Yeah, so the thing is between that, like I kind of mentioned this last week, like the defense had to watch out for Daniel Jones escaping the pocket. The problem is with Carson Wentz is he holds onto the ball way too much looking for the pass. Like, there's been opportunities for Wentz to actually move out the pocket and kind of run upfield, but Carson's not a runner in comparison to Daniel Jones. I would say, and this is going to sound really harsh to the Commanders and Carson Wentz, he's more of a sitting duck in the pocket, if that makes sense.
No, it does.
That's my opinion of it. I mean, some people might think of it a little bit different, but if you were to kind of compare the two NFC East quarterbacks and Jones and Wentz, like if there's one player who can actually kind of escape the pocket and run upfield, it's Jones. But whereas Wentz, he just likes to try and stay in there and hold on to it as much as he can to find the pass. And next thing you know, the pocket's collapsed and he just gets absolutely nailed down to the ground.
That's a really good point. I mean, okay, so he does sit around and try to find those targets. He does have quite a few of them. However, they only managed to get, what, 87 yards of offense versus the Eagles last week? Is that what you said?
It was 87 yards in the rush, in the rushing department. So Antonio Gibson got 38. Yeah. Carson Wentz got 22 rushing yards. Then there was Curtis Samuel with 13. McIsaac with 8. And Jonathan Williams with 6. In terms of the wide receiving core, Terry McLaurin got 102 yards with a 17.0 average. Samuel, 48 yards. McIsaac, 32 yards. But in terms of their total receiver yards, it was only 211 yards with an 8.4 average and 25 recorded catches.
I feel like that's a little doable.
It's winnable. Like, it's not amazing statistics, but they're still
moving around. Yeah.
They're still moving the ball, but it really just depends on how Dan Quinn and, like I said, defensive lineman coach Aiden Durdy tends to line up our defense and put the pressure on this offensive line and Carson Wentz. So, and I think this might be the game for our secondary. Like I said, Diggs and Brown and everybody, Hooker, to really get their numbers up, I think, as well. Because if there's one thing about Carson Wentz is, though, he tends to make interception mistakes is just as bad as Daniel Jones from time to time.
Yeah, as far as Dan Quinn goes, I just feel like, you know, watching that Eagles game, he had to have a little bit of a roadmap on to how to, you know, stop the Commanders from firing. But yeah, so I see this game to be like pretty winnable for the Cowboys. Yeah. I was gonna say, though, you know, our defense hasn't had, you know, the takeaways like we did last year. I think this might be a game where you see them start to get their groove back a little bit.
So here's the thing, though. Here's the tendency. I'm going to give you a bit of perspective on this. So if it's not for our front seven, like our D-line and our linebackers, they're actually doing all the workhorse. They're the ones that's getting all the stats and statistics right now. They're all those 13 sacks and that kind of leaves lesser numbers for likes of digs and stuff like that, from takeaways and stuff like that. So it's like, the more our defensive line and linebackers perform and like the run game and the pass rush, the less numbers our secondary is going to get. So I'm not particularly worried from that perspective. Like, I'd be worried if our defensive front were not getting to the quarterback and he was getting the ball. That's when you would get to see more of like said Diggs and Brown and Donovan Wilson making plays in the backfield. So I think if one part of that defense is doing good, then you expect to see that number of the other half to go down and vice versa.
No, you're 100% right. I mean, that's exactly right. I just feel like, you know, with his affinity for trying to, you know, sit back and throw, that he's going to have a misstep. And I think that's where you take advantage this week.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking over Carson's overall stats so far this season under the three games he's played. So he's 7 touchdowns and 3 interceptions. And he's been, and here's the most interesting part, he is joint top with Joe Burrow right now as the most sacked quarterback with 15 sacks.
Poor Joe.
Yeah, sorry I had to bring up LSU there. I'm sorry.
He's gotten right the last 2 weeks. He'll be all right.
Yeah.
But yeah, so let's see. Looking back at, you know, the last few times Carson Wentz has played the Cowboys, I believe you said they won 4 and lost 4.
Yeah, so here's an interesting thing. So over the, since 2016, when Carson Wentz got drafted, he's won 4 and lost 4. But if out of the 4 games that Carson has won against the Cowboys, it always tends to be near the end of the season. And I don't know how you want to make of that, if you will, but my assumption of it is we've either won the division and we're resting our starters, or the season's already over because we didn't make the playoffs. So we're giving our backups and our third strings to kind of get some game time to find out if they're worthwhile bringing back for next season or the following season. So in a way, what I'm trying to say is Carson Wentz's wins against the Cowboys are pretty much voidable, really. That's how I tend to feel about it.
Yeah, obviously he was, you know, leading another team at that time, but you know, it was within this in the NFC East, and he's, you know, the leader. So let's see if we can't make that 4-5 to 4 losses.
Yeah, four wins to five losses.
I was like, which way do I want to put losses and wins there? okay, but I want to kind of look at our side of the ball. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously Noah Brown had a jump again this week. Yes. Which is great. CD had a slow start, if you will, and managed to make up for it, you know, later in the game. How do you see this wide receiver core doing, you know, especially with, you know, Gallup coming in for a couple snaps?
I'm actually not as worried as I used to be. I've been perfectly honest. I'm over the moon that Noah Brown has stepped up his game like by tenfold, pretty much. A guy who was pretty much like a fifth string wide receiver is pretty much now solidified himself as pretty much at least a number three right now, at least. Because we don't know if Gallup is going to be 100% that same type of right receiver we had before. But if there's one thing you can guarantee to say, he is definitely our third wide receiver in our group right now. That might push down Jalen Tolbert down to like fourth string or whatever you want to see that fit. But the stats don't lie. I mean, he's 213 yards so far for the season, averaging 14.2 per catch out of 15 receptions. His longest was 28 yards, and he's only scored one touchdown. But in that Giants game, the amount of calls that were never given for offensive holding or pass interference was ridiculous. So I think if the referees did their job properly and catch that stuff, I would expect to see Noah Brown's stats to be even better than that. But
yeah, that obvious pass interference was probably one of the most frustrating points of the game.
Yeah.
It could have led to you being a little more correct on your prediction from last week, actually. But
yeah, I was a wee bit annoyed about it because I can't remember what I had. I was like 38.
You had 38. I was like 38. But then, like, yeah, they almost, if you think about it, if they had let us, you know, have that playback, we could have been upwards up to 30, if not, you know, up in there. So
yeah, and even like, well, and this is no diss to our offensive line. Like, if it wasn't for the initial holding calls in the early parts of the drive, we wouldn't have settled for a field goal as well.
And you made a point about that in your article in the trenches this week.
Yep.
You know, talking about how Tyler Smith had a kind of momentum killing call.
Yeah,
being
yeah.
able to, you know, He rebounded
very, very well. Tyler Smith has been absolutely fantastic, I think, personally. He's done completely changed my opinion about the draft pick. When the draft pick was made, I wasn't very sold on it. Like, drafting a tackle who could have been a second rounder potentially, but we're now playing McGuard. But hey, once again, Will McClay and again, the front office, when it comes to drafting offensive linemen in the first round, they've completely won me over once again. Because even back in the days when we drafted Travis Frederick, a lot of people had Frederick graded as a third rounder, but he became one of the best centers in the NFL. When it came to Zach Martin, everyone wanted Johnny Football at that time. I think it was like pick 16 or pick 17 that year in 2017. No, 2017. I can't remember what year it was, but it was when Johnny Football was still about, and we decided to go for Zach Martin. And by God, I'm so happy that we did do that now. But yeah, I'm kind of feeling the exact same turning of events with Tyler Smith right now. So he's winning a lot of fans over so quickly. I mean, like I said, like in my article, he did have a couple of wee hiccups at the start with the holding calls and stuff like that, but he rebounded absolutely fantastic. And when it comes to going down in the future, we don't know what we're going to do with Tyron Smith, because obviously, right. Is he ever going to play a full season ever again? Like, is it worthwhile keeping them on, like, as a backup or what? Like, there's so many questions surrounding the future for him. But in terms of the future for Tyler Smith, we know he's going to be pretty much going to be our future left tackle the way how he's progressing right now.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Yeah, and you know, it was kind of up in the air a little bit. Not really, but like just how they were going to fit Peters in into that line.
He was I was genuinely surprised. I don't know about you, but I was genuinely surprised where, because my personal thoughts was maybe move Tyler Smith back into guard because he played the majority of that position during preseason and training camp and OTAs, and that was the initial thing they were going to do with Tyler. And you're bringing in future Hall of Famer and Jason Peters to play left tackle, who's played that position pretty much for his whole career. God knows how many years, like in the NFL, he's been doing it now. Like, it's over 15 years at least, anyway. And we've just put him into guard, and by God, for those 14 snaps, he made an immediate impact. It was lovely to watch.
It was almost seamless the way that he fit in there. And like I kind of mentioned this on Girls Talking Boys with Kelsey, that I was watching him on the sideline and like after the plays and stuff like that, the way that he was going up to individual players and just being like, did you notice this? Did you see this? Are you looking at this?
Communication.
He was so good about that.
And if there's one thing I noticed a big difference was Tyler Biadasz in that game.
Yeah, 100%.
Like his level of communication with his line, like there was a couple of plays where Cooper Rush made the check and changed the play just before pre-snap, because he made a read on where the safety was lined up and where the linebackers were lined up. And you see Tyler Biadasz immediately talking to Zach Martin, turning left to Jason Peters or Matt Farniak to say, no, block this, do this, do that. That's what we've been missing from the interior part of that O-line recently. And Tyler's stepped up a notch in terms of that. And he had you can talk about the whole PFF grades and stuff like that, but when you look at the bare bones of what he did, he didn't really put a foot wrong during that game, really.
And I mean, it's not to say that, you know, he obviously Tyler's been on that line with veterans in the past, and you know, he's kind of been struggling, and it's not to say that, you know, one game makes it, but it's just interesting to see like that communication step up a little bit. I think that's how he conducts himself as a football player, and I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, I think a lot of credit is actually down to Duke Merriweather as well, who like the offseason offensive line coach, who does a lot of work for offensive lineman all across the NFL. So I think a lot of credit is down to him, because even Tyler Smith went to him, even Jute Mayweather even came to Dallas as well for, I think it was like a open seminar type of thing he did in Dallas with several offensive linemen coming from all different teams and colleges to be part of this, to learn and just build their craft pretty much. And we are seeing, like, don't get me wrong, there's still, if you talk about like the Bucks game, yeah, there's still nicks and crannies, like, still need to be fixed, but we're seeing steady progression of getting better each week now from the offensive line. But yeah, it's quite for what used to be a big worry, the fact that we lost Tyron Smith. Like, I'm still kind of on the fence a little bit, but week by week, I'm feeling more okay. I'm not as worried as I really like. I wasn't as extremely worried as I was before.
Right. And I mean, you know, just watching this, it's really interesting. You know, I feel like the start of the year, this team kind of just got punched in the mouth, and it's because they were playing such a good defense. So the fact that they were able to, you know, recover and like improve the way that they have, you know, it really affords like Cooper Rush the ability to, you know, do his job better. Also, the way that he was like throwing that ball last game, like he was taking those long shots. And honestly, I don't think that the wide receivers were expecting that.
Yeah, I mean, because we always kind of expect Cooper to be the more, well, I'm not using this as a comparison, but do what Tom Brady does, look for the short to medium range passes.
Sure.
Like, you're not expecting to go like safety, 50 plus yard passes or anything like that. Like, trying to keep it nice and short and simple and get the ball out quick type of scenario. Rush is definitely improving. He's definitely been a really good backup. And that, like, let's not forget, like, 32 teams passed up on him. They could have picked him up, because obviously we didn't put him into the 53-man squad originally, and we brought him back in. So it's like he's actually really turned things around for us. But I do want to kind of highlight, it's like I'm not happy with how the media are perceiving this.
And
I know how you feel about it. It just kind of feels like the media are going just basically out there to troll the Cowboys fans right now. Like saying, oh, Rush is better than Dak, he's undefeated. Like, try and throw these, like, it's three games. He's not thrown over. Like, don't get me wrong, Rush is doing a great job, but
he's doing a great job. Yeah.
There's a big difference here. Big difference. There's a reason why Dak's been paid all this money, who had over, 4,000 yards last season with 37 touchdowns last year. That's a starting quarterback's caliber of, like, statistics there. So,
Really is. And I think, Jay Tuck actually, if you don't follow him, you need to. He's been on with Paul before. But, you know, people are just saying, you know, stuff about, I'm not impressed with Dak's inability to win games, like, close, and Cooper's getting rid of the ball faster, whatever. His point was, he said, just FYI, Dak ranked fifth in 2021. With 92 tight window completions, which means less than 1 yard separation, at 34.8%, with the national average being 34%. And I'll give you the benefit of the doubt, because you may be new to this community, but we speak context over emotional BS. And I was like, yes, Jay Tuck, that's what's up.
Yes.
Dak has like these crazy abilities, and I feel like people just ignore them just because of like
who he plays for.
Right.
It's as simple as that. It's because he plays for Dallas. He plays for the Cowboys. Like,
well, and it's like you expect him to hit these throws and stuff like that.
Well, here's the thing. Let's put this in a different conversation. Yeah. If you were to see Dak Prescott playing for a different team that's not named the Dallas Cowboys, you'd be up in arms. You would be talking, oh, he's like Patrick Mahomes-esque or something like that. Right. Like, or he's like, he could be the next best thing. Like, like they're talking about like said like oh like Dak and Lamar Jackson or something like that. Like it'd be crazy talks about how good he is and stuff. But no, it always seems to be like trolling press coverage when it comes to Dak and the Cowboys, pretty much.
And it's always just like, what have you done for me lately? Like his, you know, obviously he had a bad game against the Bucks. The Bucks have a good defense. Like it's not that surprising to me that he was struggling.
Yeah. I'm not just that. I'm not mad about it.
I think he would have had a great get right game the following week.
Could you imagine what we do to the Bengals if Dak was playing, and not to mention the Giants? You were talking about more points in the board.
38
easily.
Would have been easy.
Yeah, 38. I'm going for 50 burger on that occasion.
Yeah, and I'll take Dave's comparison and just kind of rework it a little bit.
You're talking about our good friend Dave Hillman.
Yes, yeah. Dave Hillman. Yeah. He said on Speak, he said, well, I won't say what he said. I will take half of what he said and change the rest of it. But he said Dak is like a Ferrari and Cooper Rush is more like a Toyota Camry. Dependable. Gets a job done. Great mileage. He's there when you need him. But like, I want that Ferrari back when it's out of the shop, is all I'm saying. I want to let her rip.
It's an interesting way of kind of describing it, but yeah, it works in a way. Like,
yeah,
like you do want a reliable car when you need it. Absolutely. You don't want one that's going to break down and actually fall apart under pressure. So,
yep, it can only go so far. But yes, I think we both agree on this. And, you know, the Cowboys fans that, you know, are paying attention closely do know that stuff. So, it's easy to get triggered by the media and the talk around that. And that's kind of why they do that. And that's why Jerry feeds into it, because then people talk about it more. And then he just like lines his pockets. So as long as we're all just taking a step back and realizing that's what's happening, I think we're all going to be okay.
Yeah. I mean, especially when it comes to this Washington defense, I'm feeling okay about it. I mean, I'm looking at the numbers just now. The total sack count so far is only 8. With Jermaine Davis, the linebacker, with 3 sacks, defensive tackle Darren Payne, he's got 2. James Smith Williams, defensive end's got 1. Jonathan Allen, defensive tackle's got 1. And former Dallas Cowboy F.A. Obada, is got 1 as well. So that's your sack count for them. In terms of like sort of total tackles, they've got like 198 total tackles combined. That's your assists and solos, whereas the Cowboys, they've got a total of 196. So it's kind of in the same type of ballpark. So I'm kind of a wee bit skeptical when it comes to the run defense, because the run defense was actually quite impressive, because they managed to hold down the Philadelphia Eagles to only 72 yards. And we know Jalen Hurts, the quarterback for the Eagles, can be a running type of quarterback. So for Washington to isolate the Eagles like that, it's actually like it's something to be kind of aware of, and we can't take their defensive front lightly. And also just to mention as well, they are missing Chase Young and Fontez Sweat. I think they're two star defensive ends. They're not going to feature. So, but yet their defensive front are still pretty from the run game. We just need to be very careful when it comes to what we do things and try not do anything too fancy. So it'll be interesting to see. I was just going to say it's going to be a really good test, I think, for our O-line this game. Against a defense that's kind of been a wee bit slightly underestimated a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't want to look past the Commanders in any way here. Like they do have, you know, solid offensive weapons, and they do have a decent defense. It's, I mean, they are missing key factors on both ends. But the way that the Kellen's been able to at least, you know, put out some product that like that Cooper Rush can manage and manage well, it's good. And the fact that the O-line is able to, you know, let the run game kind of get going in any capacity is just an improvement in itself. So I don't know. How do you see that them faring, starting, you know, Zeke and Pollard up against that?
I mean, I'm loving this 1-2 punch combination they're doing right now. I'm one of these Cowboys fans. As long as we're getting, we're moving the ball upfield, I don't care what the salary or the preference of your running back is. I'm happy that we can use Zeke and Tony in a way where we actually are moving the ball upfield, and we're seeing that right now. There will be some of our fan base that will be a wee bit upset. Zeke's not getting the ball as much. He's getting paid all this money. But yeah, we need to kind of remember as well is, like, if out of the pass protection side of things, like in terms of the passing game, you would want Ezekiel Elliott to be in there to help with the additional blocking side of things compared to Tony Pollard. And we kind of saw that early on there. Tony Pollard did struggle a little bit with a try to pass block. So, but in terms of, like, if you're trying to do something more speed-based, Tony Pollard's your guy. If you're trying to actually run, get those dirty yards, put linebackers on their butt, then Zeke's your guy. He's going to truck them down. So it's like, it's literally a nice combination we've got right now. And
it was actually funny. I don't know if you heard on your end, like, you obviously, you get Troy in them when you're listening to games too, but he kept saying that Zeke is not a physical back.
I disagree.
And I was like, what are you talking about?
I disagree.
Are we watching
with that
the same game?
Like,
he was extremely physical that last game, especially.
Oh, absolutely. Like, he's a powerful runner. He's like, if you try and tackle him, his feet's still going to move. Whereas if you tackle Tony Pollard, he will go down a lot more easier. That's the difference. So that comes to show how much brute strength that Zeke has as a runner.
And he really does have a lot of brute strength. He's gotten a lot stronger this year too. And I think that people get so lost in the "we're paying him so much" thing. Like, can we focus on the fact that they need each other, those two, right now in this?
I think we're probably the only fan base where, even if we were to win the Super Bowl this year and Zeke was to get under 1,000 yards, they would still moan about that.
Yeah.
I'd be like, come on, we just won.
Exactly. They'd be like, okay, now what are we getting rid of Zeke? I'm like, okay, can you just, let's focus on the fact that, like you said, 1-2 punch. They go the way each other goes. How about that? Like, when you're talking about the offense, they were saying, offense goes the way Zeke goes. I think they feed off of each other and they need each other. And the fact that, if you can get Zeke to, like, power through something and then they're focusing on him and they just, like, send it out to Tony and he gets those, like, chunk yards, like, that's great.
Yeah. And there's been scenarios where we've actually had both of them on at the same time where, and it's like, that would be a big, massive confusion for defense. Is like, okay, is he going to be either one of them?
Are they sending him out? Like,
and some scenarios they don't even get the ball at all. Cooper Rush will probably end up throwing it down the middle to the tight end, who it'll probably be like Jade Ferguson or Peyton Hendershot this game, perhaps.
Yeah, Hendershot had
he had a beautiful
it was
reception.
Really rough for a hot second because he got that penalty, but he was a goldfish. He didn't let that affect him.
No, he was quite composed. I was quite impressed with the Hendershot shot. So, that was like a 29-yard reception. So in that last game there, he got, that was a 29-long reception there. So far, the total of the season, he's got 43 yards. So that was pretty much his best play so far since being a Cowboy so far.
Yeah, no, it was great. I loved seeing that. But let's kind of veer over to the other side of the ball real quick, because you had an article that came out today titled "Cowboys Defensive Line Could Take the Top Spot in Pass Rushing This Weekend." We kind of touched on it, but give us the spiel.
Yeah, so the article is pretty much the Dallas Cowboys do have an opportunity to overthrowing the Buffalo Bills in the top spot in the pass rush department. So as it stands right now, the Buffalo Bills are ranked number one through multiple sources like PFF and like NFL.com and stuff like that. So, but Dallas are pretty much like on average between second and third in multiple sources. And the Eagles are kind of in amongst that as well. The way how things are going right now, the Cowboys have a good opportunity to kind of become top dogs of the NFL in terms of the pass rush. And just to kind of add more numbers in that equation, the Cowboys do lead in terms of the sack numbers right now with 13. Then it's the Eagles with 12. And the Buffalo Bills are third with 11.
And you said Micah Parsons himself is second in the sack leader race. Is that right?
Yeah, he's tied second behind linebacker from Pittsburgh. I can't remember his name top of my head. I think it's like Hightower or something. I can't remember. But it's only a half a sack difference. So he's joint second with a few other names out there in the NFL. But with him being unable to get to Daniel Jones on last week there, expect more from Parsons this game. Because remember, he'll be more hungry for it. He was suffering from that cold, so he could have been still a little bit lethargic. Even though Parsons still caused a lot of disruption in that offensive line for the Giants, pancaking Glowinowski, put him on his butt, and still got to Daniel Jones for a QB hit at the same process, which was quite impressive. But in terms of the sack count, it didn't really matter. Like, but in that game, because D-Law got there, we won the game, and Daniel Jones was just, he had a torrid time against our defense. But for this game against Carson Wentz, if I was Micah Parsons right now, I'd be like feasting on this opportunity.
Maybe drooling a little bit. He's like, let me back there.
Yeah. I expect this to be a really, really stand-up performance for our defensive front. Just from the pass rush, like even from like Sir Donovan Wilson running down to the actual line as well from the safety position and stuff like that as well. LVE seems to be one of those guys that, like, he didn't really have the best of games against the Giants, but he's been one of those quiet people where he's doing his job. Like, his tackle count's stacking up. He's not really putting much of a foot wrong in most places. But I just think from the defensive front to the linebackers and even our secondary, like the whole defense, let's just say the whole defense, expect big things, because I can definitely see interceptions getting thrown. And I can definitely see sacks getting thrown happening.
Yeah, I mean, talk about a game for D-Law last week. I think he really, number one, he has always said that he loves to feast on a Giants quarterback. So to see him get back there quite a few times was fun.
Yeah, like it definitely made a promise, and he delivered in that statement before the game last week. And yeah, he looked fantastic. He made rookie Evan Neal like an actual rookie. He really took him to school in that whole game. Like, and the thing is, like, DeMarcus Lawrence didn't have to beat him for speed. It was just pure technique. Like, his hands, like, hand placement, he just completely just made easy work on Evan Neal and got to Daniel Jones on a few occasions. But it should have been more than that. It could have been at least five sacks. It should have been at least five because of the offensive holding, which was never like all the holding and stuff like that. So, but hey, but feeling confident.
It's going to be good for him, probably.
Yeah, definitely.
He got that swagger back, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah.
It was in a high supply last week.
Yeah. I mean, I want to give a wee shout out to the interiors as well. Even though statistically they don't have the numbers and stuff like that, but when you watch the game film, like Tristan Hill is actually playing a really good season so far. He's looking really good. Like, and like so, Osa Adigizua, Neville Gallimore, and big Osa, no, Quentin Bohanna, sorry, Bohanna, he was getting into his gaps. He was like doing his job. He was like ensuring the running back doesn't hit those lanes. Like basically, like before the big massive play from Saquon Barkley last week, which was the 36-yard run for the touchdown. Before that, we only managed to keep him down to roughly about 45 yards, give or take, throughout the whole game. That, I mean, that's a win itself, and that's all because of the interior defensive line to stop the inside run and had to force Saquon to kind of run more to the outside, so he wasn't going to gain as much by doing that, because like I said, LVE and Donovan Wilson and etc. were all there waiting for him. So I think we can expect to see more of the same for our interiors, like for stopping Antonio Gibson and McIsaac and stuff like that. So it'll be very interesting to see.
Yeah, I mean, this defense is just taking on a life of its own with Dan Quinn at the helm. So it's been really fun to watch.
Yeah. On a wee separate note, I don't know if you may have noticed this, and it is Cowboys related, but did you see Dez Bryant's tweets the other day?
I've seen a lot of his tweets. I don't know if I haven't really been on Twitter. I won't lie to you. Since
he's actually got a bet with Meek Mill right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're putting a wager on, not so much for this game, but I think it's for the Eagles game in a couple of weeks' time.
That makes sense.
I think it's like $20,000 they're putting on each other.
That's chill. Up from his 10K that he's been just putting down and winning back.
I'm telling you, it's like every time Dez puts a bet on, Cowboys win. So
works Dez, for me.
Yeah, Dez, put your money down. We need to see you put. It seems to be a lucky.
Your mouth is.
Yeah, no, it seems to be a lucky charm for the Cowboys, like the fact that Dez is putting money down.
Yeah,
and the Cowboys win. So
I have to say, obviously we loved, you know, Dez 88. He's great, but Dez the fan is so funny.
Oh man, I love it. Like he is, he's went complete. Like Cowboys fan now, I think it was like back against Cincinnati, he was just walking about AT&T Stadium, like going through like the main Masonette halls and stuff like that, getting some food and meeting some fans, and he actually ended up taking a couple of selfies and that. He's like, "Hey man, I'm just here to watch the game. Have a good one to all the fans." Like, I was like, "Man, that is, like if I obviously saw Dez Bryant walk past me, I would freak out. I would freak the hell out."
Yeah, and I love that he's wearing his cowboy hat every week.
Yeah, and not just that, he's shown his support for the current players. He was wearing number 7 for Trevon Diggs against the Giants, and I think he was
wearing Micah the week
before. Yeah, he was wearing Parsons, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, but I love that. Like, he's so involved. He's a great hype man, and, like, he's obviously very recognizable by the team. But it's like, Michael Irvin took the route of, let me be on TV. Let me talk about the Cowboys. Like, I'll like be the evangelist, whatever, for the Cowboys, like out there in the media. But like Dez is like, no, I'm at home. I'm coming to the games. I'm traveling to the games. I want to hang out with the guys. I want to like be with them on the sideline. I want to, you know, give them high fives and stuff like that. I love that from him.
Yeah, it's like you've got the 1-2 punch combination of Michael Irvin and Dez Bryant. Like, you've got Michael Irvin being on national television, giving it the Cowboys speech, "We're gonna do this, we're gonna do that." Then you've got Dez Bryant like being the fan, being amongst it, and getting everybody hyped up. I was like, what more can you want from your former players to actually still be there and be involved? Like, it's just beautiful to watch. It really is. Like,
yeah, and you can really tell that. I mean, he took a great interest in it when CD came in the helm and, you know, took the number 88. And you, like, normally you would think, like, especially someone who had sights on coming back in the NFL, you would think that, you know, there might be a little bit of saltiness there. Not a bit.
Not one bit. He's like, there's not one bit of any selfish tendencies there. He's so supportive, like, and he's always trying to, like, he's even trying to help man with stuff like that. Like, and that's what, like, that's just like, That's Cowboys legend status to me.
It is, yeah. I mean, he was already cemented there for a lot of us, but you know, Dez the Fan is definitely doing it for anyone that was a doubter.
Yep, definitely.
Perfect. Well, you guys, we're excited about this game tomorrow. In the meantime, Paul has written you some articles to check out, like we mentioned.
Yep.
So check those out on bloggingtheboys.com and make sure that you rate, review, and subscribe for Blogging the Boys anywhere you listen to podcasts. So we bring that to you every single day. Paul, where can everyone watch the game with you as it will be a good time for you this tomorrow?
So you guys can check me out on IMP Stew on Twitter and Instagram. And yes, I'll probably be posting some Instagram stories of my reactions during the game at a more respectable time, thank God. So yeah, the Brett Maher winning field goal was pretty much like, God, what time did I record that? That must have been like 3 o'clock in the morning or something like that, like 3 a.m. And then here's me screaming my head off. But yeah, so I'll probably be doing some couple of posts and stuff like that during the game and stuff like that.
And you can follow me at Meg Murray with 4 R's on Instagram and Twitter. I actually got back on Twitter this game since I was not there. So jury's out on if I will be able to tweet tomorrow or not. There's a chance that I go to that game, and if I am there, I will have zero service. Not that anyone cares but me.
I care.
Perfect. Well, you guys, we'll catch you next week, and go Cowboys.
Let's go. How about them Cowboys?
How about them?
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.